Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, interestingly enough, I talk about Great Britain and I talk about Brits. Actually, pretty much almost every Thursday, at least for the first semester of every school year, when I'm teaching about the Constitution and civics to the classes that I've been teaching for 7 years to high school age homeschoolers here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area, that's Foundations of Freedom. So we talk a lot about the early days of American history and all the influence and what was brought over here from Great Britain and governmentally and institutionally and even communally and how American life looked early on. And then as we transition into the conflict there that we had with Great Britain, the original Brexit, if you want to go there. And so I talk about Brits a lot, but I don't know that I've ever actually had a Brit on the show. I think this might be a first, which is saying something after 11 years and a couple thousand shows. So Ben Holloway is here with us today. He's an instructor of philosophy and history of ideas here at Southeastern Baptist, because it is every Thursday. It's Theology Thursday, so we're going to get an interesting perspective that we usually don't hear on life in America, and particularly evangelicalism or Christianity in America, and also Christianity in Great Britain, Europe at large, and also somebody that I think was intending to be a 00 when he was a young lad. So anyway, Ben, welcome to the show. How are you? Happy New Year.
Well, it's a privilege to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So how did a fine fellow like yourself end up here in the land of the rebels?
Well, I married in, so and was thoroughly inculcated before arriving on the shores by my wife, who is from Minnesota. So
thoroughly American.
I was Americanized overseas. We got married and lived in England for a while, and I caught on that there was a slight difference between English culture and American culture, and I was swayed one way, which led to us arriving on these shores.
So what part of Great Britain were you born in? Did you grow up in?
I just north of London. My parents lived in what they call the home counties, or you probably would call them the shires.
Oh, okay.
And
very
so
good.
We were
hobbits and such.
That's right. We were in the land of hobbits, Hertfordshire. My father commuted into London, and so we had a very standard English life of sort of home county life, you know, garden and all that you can imagine.
So would you liken that to kind of middle American,
probably,
flyover country, Midwestern, good solid family values, pretty humble people, hardworking, have a garden at home, have a fence around the yard, stuff like that?
Yes, quite possibly. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, it's slightly sort of between rural and you know, urban life. You know, right there's a sort of a sprawl which is still very much the countryside, yet within, you know, a stone's throw of the city.
And so from a religious perspective, I was sharing with you before we went on the air, I pulled this article from The Spectator, which is only 2 years old. This came out in 2016, I guess almost 3 years old now. A landmark in national life has just been passed, talking about there in the UK. For the first time in recorded history, those declaring themselves to have no religion have exceeded the number of Christians in Britain. Some 44% of us regard ourselves as Christian, 8% follow another religion, and 48% follow none. The decline of Christianity is perhaps the biggest single change in Britain over the past century. So growing up in that environment, which of course it's accelerated, but growing up in that environment, how did you come to faith in Jesus Christ? Because Great Britain, I would imagine, even though it's low, 44% regard themselves as Christians, about 76% here in America is the number. If you ask people on the street, "And are you a Christian?" they'll, yeah, it's kind of a default position. So how did you come to actual saving faith in Christ? Because there's kind of cultural Christianity, and then there's actual biblical Christianity. So how did that happen in your life?
Yeah, I mean, in England, we have a state or a national church. So many people used to say, "Yes, I'm Christian," purely because you're born in England. And that was my presumed thought when I was young, that, you know, in virtue of being born in the place, I automatically was a Christian. My experience of conversion, however, was mainly as a result of being a fan of James Bond.
Mm.
And So I was
I've seen all the James Bond movies, and I could see how that would easily lead you to the cross.
Right. I loved 00 life and thought spying was just the most greatest thing you could possibly do. And so as a consequence, my parents bought me a book. And this this book was all about spying. In fact, I brought it with me if you want to have a look.
Oh, did you? Absolutely.
It's called
The
Secret Agent's Handbook, which there you are for the Facebook viewers.
That's beautiful.
And it's slightly sort of tea-stained. But that was they bought me that when I was 10 years old. And I went to boarding school from the age of 7. And boarding school is an unusual experience because you have two lives, the home life and the school life. And never the twain do meet. And so you could live pretty separate lives, one in one place and one in the other. And you didn't have particularly...
Were you gone year-round, or did you come home in the summertime?
Well, you'd come home for holidays.
Okay.
But otherwise, you'd be at school. And so the way I'd get to school is on the bus. And we'd travel all the way across the country, and then we'd be at school for a few months and then all leave to all our separate homes all over the country. And so I became a Christian at home, but the way I got to that was by, first of all, becoming a spy. And so I got this book, and on the bus ride back to school, I decided to talk about this book. But instead of talking about the book, I started to talk about an imaginary version of the book, which was me attending spy school. And so I had a very good friend, and we sat on the bus all the way home, all the way to school, rather. And I spun this lie about attending spy school. I said, look, I've become a secret agent for MI5, and they're hiring young kids now to do their work. And so I've joined in. And amazingly, he bought this ridiculous nonsense.
Excellent.
And he was enthralled. And I had a fan.
Yeah,
this was the
yeah.
first and maybe the only time I had a fan.
Yeah, you were ahead of the social media thing. You had an actual fan.
He was following and clicking like all
yes,
the way.
Excellent.
And so I convinced him that there was such a thing as spy school. And so he was involved in this story, and I had this book in my pocket, and I never took it out. And so, when we got to school, I decided it was time to form this sort of subversive group called Spy School. So I did, and I garnered him and a couple of other friends, and we met regularly in the school basement where they had a boiler.
Sounds a little bit like Dead Poets Society.
It was rather like that.
Okay.
You can imagine it's an old school with cobwebs everywhere.
Excellent.
And we found this room full of heaters and boilers, which looked after the school heating, which was very rarely on, as far as I can remember. But while we were there, I would then instruct them in the art of spying, which was essentially whatever this book said, I would learn and recite back to them. And this was spy school, and these kids followed me all the way until I met Jesus.
Oh, yeah. See, and now he gets in there and messes up the whole thing. So this young British lad goes into starts the spy school. I love that. But how that leads to faith in Jesus Christ, I have no clue where you're going to go with this. We're talking to Ben Holloway, instructor of philosophy and history of ideas here at Southeastern. We'll move on to a lot of other things, but you got to hear that story finish up and see how he got saved. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Happy New Year to you. I can't believe it's 2019. The years are getting shorter as I'm getting older. That's just the way it is. There's got to be a proverb out there somewhere on that. I'm actually working my way through Proverbs and the Daily Dose devotional. So if you're not getting those come out Monday through Friday, although I did take a 10-day sabbatical recently. But we just started chapter 19 in Proverbs. I write these myself, and we've written, I think I'm up to 109 devotionals in the book of Proverbs through the beginning of chapter 19. So these are, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know how I communicate. I'm very direct, kind of get bottom line, get right to it. And that's the way I go through the Bible as well. And when I teach the Bible, when I do things like these devotionals, you'll get in and out of one of my devotionals in two and a half minutes. But you'll usually get a pretty good, loving, swift kick in the rear end. And typically the harder they are, the more they apply to me. So if you want to look at a little indoor, little inside glimpse of what's going on in my life and how the Lord is working on me, if you read a particular Daily Dose devotional, go, man, that one is a little rough. You can just assume that God's probably dealing with me on that particular one. But I hope you'll check that out. If you want to get that, it's super easy. Just text the word DOSE, D-O-S-E. Text the word DOSE to 66866, and we will put you on the email list. 66866 is the number you text to, because I know you're about my age. So if I say text the word dose to 66866, that's not natural language for you. So if you're going to text something to your wife instead of her name, it would be 66866. That's who you're sending it to. And the message simply is the word dose, D-O-S-E. We're talking to Ben Holloway, instructor of philosophy and history of ideas here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, who actually happens to have been born in and raised in Great Britain. So we're kind of taking advantage of that perspective, which most of us don't have and quite frankly don't listen to or hear very often, on not only kind of Christian life and the development of Christianity, what's happened there in Great Britain, but his perspective on what's happening here in America. We were talking before the show started, Ben, and I was saying pretty much I think Europe, Great Britain, and then it swings around to Canada and then drops down to America, and we're following you guys in terms of the number of people that will openly say, yeah, I'm a Christian, that being cultural or real or whatever, has dropped precipitously, and those numbers are getting much smaller. Of course, you have an influx of Islam over there, which we'll talk about that. But right now, we're talking about your testimony, which I've never heard a 007 James Bond type testimony before. So there you are. You're in boarding school. You get the book. What's the name of the book again? You actually have it with
you. The Secret Agent's Handbook.
So you've had that. You start a secret agent society and
yes.
a secret agent spy school
yes.
at your boarding school.
That's right.
But how do you go from that to Jesus Christ?
Well, when I, again, got on the bus, and this is a boarding school, so we're all enclosed in one area, but we get on the bus every few months and go back home for a holiday. And so I went back home, and when I arrived home, I realized my mother had obviously had some experience in her life that had changed her. And the change was so dramatic that I was totally intrigued. And so I asked her, I said, "Mom, you know, there's something about you that's different, and I can't put my finger on it." Mm. And she said, "Well, Ben, I've become a Christian." And I remember my initial reaction was to say, "What do you mean you've become a Christian?
Yeah,
you're English.
You already are one.
You already are one. In virtue of your birth, you are a Christian, are you not?" And she said, "No, I was not a Christian. And now I have met and I know this person, Jesus Christ." And this was profoundly interesting to me. And it was also the beginnings of somewhat of a skeptical attitude that I adopted towards it. And I asked her lots of questions. You know, how can a person who's dead be alive? You say you have a Holy Spirit in you. What does that mean? I just asked her and probed lots and lots of questions until one day, I think I had a bag full of knowledge by this time about what she believed. One day we're on a bike ride, and you can imagine it. It's England. We're on a. She's on her bike with her basket in the front.
Of course,
there's daisies growing.
Fresh bread
in the field.
Daisies, right?
Exactly. The whole thing is exactly how you'd imagine it. And I'm following on my Grifter, which was at the time the worst bike ever made in the history of the universe. And I'm following her dutifully behind on a little bike ride, and she goes into this common grass area with lots of daisies, as I say, and I do. Too, except my bike remains in a ditch, so I'm flying through the air, and wallop, I hit the ground, and I make a noise like a chainsaw. I'm winded, rather like I've been playing rugby, and I think she lay down beside me, and she said, "Ben," and I think this is because she wanted to make sure if I was going to die at that moment, I was going to the right place. She said, "Ben, would you like to become a Christian?" And through the rasping sounds of my messed up chest, I said, "Yes, sure." And so she led me in a prayer, and the prayer was something very simple. It related to asking forgiveness for my sin, and asking that change would take place in my life. Mm-hmm. So I said, "Jesus, come into my life and change me." And one thing I do remember is that I was not struck by any great.
Right.
Change at that time. I thought, what's supposed to happen? Am I supposed to hear angels or hear a voice from heaven saying, "Hi, Ben, welcome to the club"? I mean, what is supposed to happen? But nothing did. And
how old were you again?
I was 10.
Okay.
So I was expecting some drama.
Right, of course.
There was no drama. I got on the bike and rode home. But a few months, weeks went by, and I was back on the bus and went to school. And back at school, I encountered one of my favorite, I say it somewhat sarcastically. I'm not sure I had a favorite teacher. He was a teacher who had a certain dislike to me. I guess I annoyed him or I did naughty things or something like that. And he came up to me one day and said, "Ben, I don't know what it is, but something about you has changed." And
that?
So I knew that the same thing that happened in my mother had happened in me.
That's awesome.
And so I was sure that this was real and that Jesus can change a life. Of course, the changes that took place in my life needed to include this lie that I'd built up.
Right, the spy school.
Right.
Because you, in fact, were not working for MI5.
That's quite right. And okay. I realized that that truth counts to Christ. And he is the way, the truth, and the life. And I was telling a lie. And this was – I was deeply convicted by this. And I realized that I needed to confess to my friends. And so I did so. And I said, look, I have lied. Spy school does not exist. And I've now become a Christian, and I thought this is just the recipe for the worst school career ever.
Of course.
I'm going to be just the I'm going to be pilloried.
You'll be that kid.
That kid. And the amazing thing was that over time, after I talked about the gospel, and I said that Jesus has died for your sin, and you can be forgiven for your sin, and you can be changed. I mean, I was a different person, and now I'm different. I'm different because of this person, Jesus Christ. And eventually, you know, one or two of my friends became Christians.
Wow.
And the amazing thing is that that same basement room we met in for spy school, we continued to meet in.
How about that?
And instead of talking about spying, we would talk about Jesus.
Became an upper room instead of a spy room.
Exactly. So this was
my journey. That's awesome.
And that's really been the story ever since. I mean, a testimony like that is always should be given with a caveat in that these things are only the start of a life.
Yes, that's right.
And that really, you know, the one thing I think people need to know about the gospel from my life is that it can change it. People are looking for a different life. And they do anything to change it.
They'll do anything to change it.
Vote in different people.
Well, when people are trying to build up their following on social media, they're trying to fill a hole in their lives.
Yeah.
That can only be filled by a correct relationship with their creator.
Right.
So everybody knows. That's why I don't give any ground. I actually don't believe in atheists. Just based on Romans chapter 1, there's no such thing as an atheist.
Right.
An atheist to me is just an agnostic with an attitude problem. Right. But there's no such thing as an atheist. And everybody's got an aching and everybody's trying to feel well.
Yes.
And healed.
Yes.
And they want what they know they don't have,
yeah.
which is reconciliation with their creator.
That is the key.
So it's absolutely. And that doesn't matter whether you live in America or you live in Great Britain or Australia.
Right.
Everybody's got the exact same problem.
Absolutely.
When we come back, Ben, I want to let's talk about Great Britain at large and what do you think has happened over there with the radical decrease in Christianity. And again, I've got a theory on that in terms of kind of what I call faux Christianity. And then actual Christianity. I think the same thing's happening in America that we've already seen happen in Great Britain. We'll talk about that, and then we'll get Ben's opinion about Christian life in America. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today with a new friend, Ben Holloway, who will actually, you're stuck with me for all eternity now, Ben. I mean, you can't, we're eternal friends now and brothers in Christ. So, Ben was born in just north of London and is a Brit and grew up over there and then eventually found his way over to America and is here. Are you working on your PhD here as well as besides being an instructor?
Yes.
What's your PhD going to be in?
It's philosophy of religion.
And
I'm writing about language and the existence of God. So.
Wow, fascinating. Okay, so I'll make sure I keep track of that. And I definitely would love to have you back on in the future. So that would be great. But we were listening to Ben share his testimony, which was fascinating and involved James Bond. If you missed it, you can grab the podcast later or grab the Facebook Live feed later and check that out. But as you you were born again when you were 10.
Yes.
So as you began to mature in your faith, and you were talking about, and I read it from an article earlier from The Spectator over in Great Britain, showing that about 44% of Brits will regard themselves as Christian. That's very important to see that terminology. Regard themselves as Christian doesn't mean they actually are, that they're actually born again. But they would call themselves Christians. So you're at 44% over there. We're still at about 75, 76%. But like yourself, you're born in Great Britain. You're a Christian. It's just the Church of England, and that's just the deal. You knew you weren't a Muslim. You weren't an atheist, but so you're a Christian. But as you began to mature in your faith, what did you see in your homeland in terms of other people that probably assumed they were Christians but actually weren't? And then just kind of the rapid decline of Christianity in general in Great Britain.
Well, there's probably two things. One is, you know, your personal ethics and morality are it's difficult to overturn a sort of an environment in which a Christian personal ethic is not number one. Because you're influenced by everything around you. And so, you know, what you consider to be evil and good become warped in a culture in which, you know, Christ is not the first thing that people think about. And the second thing is, you know, Christianity is a confessional, belief-based form of life. I mean, you have to commit yourself to believe certain things, and those beliefs inform your actions, or they transform your actions. And so, from my personal experience, because I was at boarding school, I did not get into an environment of good discipleship. So it took me a very, very long time to come to a sort of a regular lifestyle in which I'm receiving the word and being taught, yeah, instructed in the word. And that's really crucial because without that set of beliefs, you might know the gospel. So I knew the gospel very well right from the initial get-go. My mother has shared it with me. But building a foundational worldview in your life is very, very difficult unless someone's instructing you and you're being taught in the word. And I don't think I really got a foundation until I came and studied at Moody Bible Institute, wow, in Chicago. I mean, up until that point, I had a sort of anemic version of the
Would
gospel.
You say, and this will sound harsh, would you say that that opportunity simply did not exist inside the Church of England?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think instruction from the Word of God is slightly more rare in an environment, where the church is attempting to reach out to reach a rapidly secularizing group of people. It will dumb down teaching. So you really only need the gospel. As an evangelistic ministry that I was involved in much later, you could get by.
Because you got involved with Youth for Christ,
yes,
right?
Yes. And I mean, the gospel we preached was true and right and all that, but I lacked a sort of broader understanding, a broader worldview. And I think that's very difficult in an environment where it's either just assumed you are a Christian, or that if you are a Christian, your initial involvement and your lifelong involvement doesn't actually involve a great deal of in-depth study of the word, just instruction in worldview, getting your mind straightened out. I remember learning about Augustine, and I related to his life story because although he became a Christian, he took a long time to unshackle himself,
yeah,
from the kinds of thoughts that he had developed over years and years. And it's very difficult to do that unless you're under some very, very good instruction. And the presence of good teachers and good teaching in the church is vital to not only to having a solid a set of Christians who have Christian worldviews as well as a vague knowledge of the gospel, but also for evangelism itself. Evangelism can't rely on an anemic version of itself.
Sure.
It needs people who really love the faith and have a broad and well-rounded knowledge of the Bible to communicate the gospel effectively.
Did you have an interest in studying what happened? Because we can't isolate it just to Great Britain. It's happening in America, mm-hmm, too, and certainly all across Europe. You've seen this phenomenon. But do you think it's mostly a church in compromise as a church in decline by definition?
Well, ultimately, that must be the case. I mean, because a compromise, especially with a culture that's virulently anti-a Christian ethic, for example, will lead to, you know, a compromise in teaching in all sorts of areas.
Yeah.
And, of course, it will lead to a compromise in theological method. It will no longer be, instruction from the Word. But how does the Word help me understand my life situation? That's sort of the switch that can take place.
Yeah.
Instead of doing Bible study as to see what Paul said to the Ephesians, your Bible study will become how might the Bible help me solve X, Y, and Z problem in my life? And that's often how the Bible is treated in a very weakened Christian situation.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get that back, to switch back to saying, look, God has something to say to us in his word. And you know, no matter how uncool it's going to sound to the outside, this is our meat and potatoes. This is exactly,
yeah,
what this is our diet we require to be a strong church. So I think that's absolutely right. If there's a compromise in that, you really weaken the church, and you might garner some success temporarily for being flashy or for,
yeah,
being relevant,
yeah,
but ultimately you're sunk. Sustaining a good church is sustaining good, solid nourishment for the people within it. And
absolutely,
I think that's what I craved growing up, yeah, as a Christian.
Because it just really wasn't available.
Easily. Even if it was, the exposure's at such a small level that you have to really intentionally seek,
yeah,
it out to get it. Whereas in America, you still are able to walk down the street and find a Bible church that's teaching the Bible.
Yeah, it's still relatively
it's
easy.
It's still there. And I mean, okay, that's not true in all parts of America.
And we've got solid Bible teaching
really
on the internet,
yeah,
on Christian radio.
Yeah.
It's really, if you want it, it's there.
It's right
You're
there.
You're surrounded by it.
And here at Southeastern,
sure.
people being trained and instructed,
yeah.
not just shallowly in just sort of in being able to solve someone's problem quickly, but in able to really give people long-term fodder
yeah.
from the word.
And I think in Europe, and I talk about this a lot when I'm teaching the classes that I teach on Thursdays, is to look at the entanglement of church and state. Which is a 1,000, 1,500 year reign
yeah.
in Europe, and you said go no because the church loses its prophetic edge. It has mm-hmm. to remain outside of all of that,
yeah.
And then when you combine it, you're oil and water, and the whole thing just yeah. gets compromised, and you have those problems. What about the rise of Islam over there? I mean, what's that been like from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, probably two things. One is that the percentage at the moment in England or Britain, I should say, stands about just over 6%, according to the Pew Forum. And when I was there 10, 11 years ago, it was about half that. So there is a rapid increase. And during my ministry with Youth for Christ, I was placed in a very largely Islamic area in the east of London, East London. And, I mean, indeed, the school assemblies were Muslim assemblies.
Wow.
And the Christians would meet in a small classroom where we were allowed to go and speak. And it was predominant in that area. Now, of course, that's how it's worked in Britain, is that there are small alcoves entirely dominated by Muslim families. And I think, you know, as far as the church is concerned, it's a place where there should be people who are willing to go and live amongst them and to minister and proclaim the gospel and teach and plant churches and be there and love them and teach
them. Yeah, well, the mission field immigrated to your backyard.
That's right. So, and to some extent, that's what migration does. It gives you an opportunity to reach these people for the kingdom, and God has done it. It's not an accident. He's not hoodwinked by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's right.
He knows this is happening, and he exhorts us, I think, in the Word to preach the gospel without compromise.
Does your average Brit pay any attention to the influx of Islam?
I think so. I mean, in general, Britain, rather like America, has some sort of more reactionary forces, but they're pondering the same question, if you like: is this good for our country? Does this sort of massive migration from Muslim countries damage our culture to a degree that's unacceptable? And what should we do? And I think those questions are all valid. And you've got to distinguish between the political ones, where the government
sure.
has a role to play in all sorts of things, securing borders and all those sorts of things, the debates we have today. But as Christians, our mission is clear. If they're placed right there and you don't have control over government at that point or what happens.
No.
Your responsibility is the gospel to the people. No matter what they wear or where they come from or what language they speak.
Well, the average farmer, if you told them, hey, we're going to move the best field in the state to your backyard, how do you feel about that?
Right.
And the farmer's going to say, that's awesome
right.
because I'm all about the harvest.
Yes.
But most of the time, we don't think that way, whether you're in Great Britain or you're in America, I think, even for those of us that follow Christ, typically we respond politically first.
Right.
We respond from a kingdom perspective second,
yeah.
which is obviously upside down. We're talking to Ben Holloway. We're going to talk about Christianity in America from a British perspective when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show Theology Thursday, as it is every Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. By the way, whether you're a Southern Baptist or not, doesn't matter. Whether you live here in North Carolina, doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter where you live. If you're serious about your faith in Jesus Christ, if you have some serious interest in learning the Bible, you can access all kinds of stuff here at Southeastern online. You do not have to live here. I mean, if you live in the area, if you happen to be listening locally on Truth Radio, that's awesome. And you could actually come out and audit classes. There's other things that you can take advantage of here. But there's a ton of stuff that you can do online. So if you just go to their website, it's sebts.edu. That just stands for Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. sebts.edu/radio. Just do that. You just enter that in. You're going to land on a page on the Southeastern's home site that will show you all the different opportunities that you have online. Almost all of it's online. A lot of it's free, so you should definitely take advantage of that. I thought I was getting somewhere in my faith, and I taught adult Sunday school for almost 5 years, and I was learning a lot and progressing a lot. But when I first started taking classes out of here at Southeastern, first of all, I realized that I was actually kind of stupid. And then second of all, it was just every minute, every class, every interaction was just growing my faith exponentially and my understanding of Scripture exponentially. So it was it's just an incredible use of your time. It's a great stewardship plus for any of us that take the time. So please check that out for yourself, sebts.edu/radio, and you'll see all the different things. We just put it up a link. Thanks, Evan. Thanks for putting the link up right there on Facebook. If you want to join us on Facebook Live, you're probably already looking at your feed. So just in the search box, put Steve Noble Show and jump over there. Like the page, and you can join us live in the studio. Not all of you listen to the show live. Most of you do, but not all of you. So if you want to join us in the studio, you can always do that. We Facebook Live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time when the show airs live. And we're here today with Ben Holloway, who's an instructor of philosophy and history of ideas here at the seminary. Also born and raised in Great Britain. So we've been talking about his own salvation story, which was fascinating and involved James Bond, which is a first, and then kind of life over there in Great Britain in terms of what's happened with Christianity there. But when you came over here, 11 years ago now?
Yes.
As a 34-year-old man. So what's been your kind of reaction to not just life in America, but more specifically the state of the church or the state of Christianity in this country?
Well, I mean, my initial reaction was I was overwhelmed with how amazing things are.
We're all now, beautiful. We're all right. Successful. We're all fit.
It really was an amazing experience coming to America. Yeah. I mean, and as every immigrant will say, I mean, their first breath from the from the airport is just I can smell freedom in the air.
Wow,
I mean,
that's nice to hear.
It's fairly intoxicating.
Yeah,
you should know that this is an amazing place to be. But of course, you know, as I experienced the church from my arrival in America, it was at Moody Bible Institute. So here's a place where faith is thriving and we are being instructed in the Word. I've always said the best 4 years of my life, I was given a great foundation there,
though
late in life, as it turned out. But a wonderful education, foundational education. In the Bible and in a worldview, to learning how to think correctly and straight and critically think about all the things I'd assumed.
When you were at Moody, were you under the assumption in any way that life at Moody? I assume you heard Erwin Lutzer preaching every week.
I wasn't at Moody Church.
Okay, but you've got that level of
yes.
Did you think that was kind of I guess this is Christianity in America?
Yes.
It's like rock solid.
Of course. I got a good taste of a good part of evangelicalism. Now, that's not to say that I didn't also see some problems, of course. And in fact, as you say, some of the things that happen in Britain happen a little bit later here. And so at the point when I got here, people were talking about emergent church, which we'd sort of had a little bit decade before.
Yeah.
And some of the same trends were there, what one might call progressive Christianity. And a lot of that came down to, the same sorts of problems that I'd seen in England, which was that essentially your faith is seen as a solution to a problem. And it's not to say that you don't have a problem. The problem is sin, and you need a solution, and that's Jesus. But a sort of ongoing method of seeing how you can deal with a situation, and so theology was in England was rather like that. You'd start with experience, and you'd then see
what's
if
in
the
it
Bible
for me.
Relative,
if it can help me, I'll use it. If it can't, I'll move along.
Yeah, that's very much how I think the faith had sort of degenerated, and at Moody that was not the case. But you could see that happening elsewhere. And that removes your foundation. If you're without a foundation in life, a foundational worldview, a set of truths that are rock solid and ways to justify them, and you've thought through these things over a long period of time, you are like a reed in the wind. You're very easily blown about. And I grew up like that, even as a Christian, very easily blown about and easily convinced of things that were false. And I had no skill to critically think them through. And I think that in the church is the main way to combat a sort of rabid secularism, is to have good foundational worldviews put together to know your Bible well and to be able to articulate it well and think through the worldviews of others, to read widely and broadly and to read what people are being influenced by and be able to understand it and see where it's false or wrong and see what the Bible has to say.
Well, having grown up in mainline denominations in America, now my wife grew up Catholic. Mm. I grew up Protestant. And we were. I always tell people when we got married in 1992, I say we were equally unequally yoked. We were both lost. Although we had grown up going to church, her in the Catholic Church, I in the Protestant Church, Methodist Church, and peace and Presbyterian Church. I didn't know it was PCUSA until later, but that's what I grew up in. Yeah. So really mushy. It was a Sunday thing. Mm-hmm. Christmas and Easter were awesome. Awesome. You know, it's like the Super Bowl twice a year. So that's really cool. It was an aspect of your life. I was never taught, nor did I ever think of it, as a comprehensive worldview, that it's this closet up from which everything in my life comes out of.
Yep.
For most people in America, it's just one thing in your closet. It's not the essence of who you are. It's just one aspect.
Right.
And it sounds like that's probably what happened over there as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I see that over here, you know, there's the constant threat of that occurring.
Yeah.
And it occurs for multiple reasons. I mean, some of them are genuinely good reasons. I mean, how do you survive in a culture that seems to be going the other direction? And one of the ways to survive that way is to make what you do more appealing to those who are not engaged in it, and that can mean streams of compromise, or at least watered down, or less.
We don't have a problem with gay marriage or whatever. Exactly. We're not going to talk about abortion that upsets people.
Yeah, and I think that is certainly a threat to the Christian life, and certainly that's a problem that the West in general, in its churches, have dealt with. And
yeah, it's not unique
not
to Great Britain.
Dealing with. Yeah. Right, absolutely.
It's not unique to Europe.
Yeah.
It's not unique to the modern world either.
Right.
They had these problems. Go read the Bible.
Right. I mean, right.
There was all kinds of false teaching and bogus teaching and false religions back in the day.
Church of Corinth.
Solomon was right. There's nothing new under the sun.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
It's new things, as old things happening to new people.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it disappointing?
To kind of get educated
and see what was going on and to see the same kind of apathy and the problem in the church in America, the general church, not the actual church, the general church, hear it like you see it back home.
Yeah, to some degree, when you're an immigrant, everything is rosy for a little while.
Sure.
And, everything is perfect. And then you suddenly realize no one's perfect. And that's not the point of this whole thing. Of course. But to some degree, you have great advantage here in that you have so many good Bible teachers, good pastors.
Well,
good
my wife just joined us on Facebook Live, and all kinds of connections are happening here that you're not seeing because I'm the one looking at the screen. But Lori Hobbs says hello, and then our daughter goes to CLA. So I've heard about this British guy who is an awesome teacher at CLA, which is this hybrid school that our daughter goes to, who's in eighth grade. And all of a sudden, Gina, my wife, he was a CLA teacher. And I'm like, of course he was. Anyway, that's a total sidebar issue. Yeah. Sorry. But that's really cool. So we have a lot of connections that we didn't know existed. Has your perspective as a Brit and now living in America for 11 years impacted what you feel the Lord is calling you to do?
Yes, I mean, when I was in England, I was plainly mainly working in evangelism and evangelistic ministry, and I think I still want to see what I do as part of the Great Commission, if you like. And of course, working here at Southeastern fits perfectly with that. Your training and equipping people for Great Commission ministry, but the teaching aspect of it, I think, is something that I wasn't particularly focused on before, and now I am. Again, I say Christianity is belief driven. We are committed to truth that doesn't really care about your feelings.
That's right.
It has to be true.
To quote Ben Shapiro.
Right, yes. And that, to quote many a philosopher.
Or who've looked to talk truth, about Jesus himself, right?
You know, truth is – something is true whether or not you're even there to think about it
even
considered it. I think developing a disposition which says that no matter what the cost, if it's true, I'm going to commit to believing it. I think in Christianity we require that commitment to truth, and in a seminary context like this, you are concerned consistently with adhering to the truth, no matter what it might cost you in your own personal life. I mean, some of the things that people go through in seminary, in the development and college, in Christian college here at Southeastern, are probably similar to some of the things I went through when I was getting an education. You have to give up some certain well-held beliefs about the world, and sometimes that can be rather painful.
Absolutely.
But Christian discipleship is like that. You surrender your mind to the Lord.
But it's a pretty good trade.
It's one.
To come into possession of the truth.
Oh, it's one.
Which is where you'll actually find freedom.
It's the most precious.
Yeah. Thing. Do you feel any compulsion to try to impact life, Christian life back in Great Britain?
Occasionally. But I'm committed to being here.
Good.
In this great
That's
land.
Good news. All right, so the next time you're on and you get to design the show all on your own, what would you like to talk about?
Perhaps about that issue of truth and foundations, and also defending the faith coherently in a culture which has many objections to it, to try and think clearly. How do we use our minds to glorify the Lord? How do you love God with your mind?
Amen.
Not just with your actions, but with how you think.
We'll book it now.
All right.
Ben Holloway, thanks for being here, buddy.
Good.
It's great having you. We look
forward
to doing it again. Okay, everybody, this is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.